Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
From KMOX Sports.
Here's the pitch. A swing and a high fly ball.
This could be trouble. It's at the wall.
And it's a gunner!
Welcome to Sports on a Sunday Morning.
Oh!
America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Welcome to the show, BK. How are you, buddy?
I am good. How are you?
I'm good. I was coming in this morning, and just as I was getting that first glimpse of the skyline, I'm like, whoa, where'd the buildings go?
Yeah.
The river fog came up.
It sure did.
I tried to get in position to take a picture of the arch, and within like 5 minutes, the fog had burned away. I got a nice picture of the arch. No, a nice clear blue sky and sun shining on it. But that was fast, and that was very cool to see, actually.
Yeah.
It was like an hour ago.
Oh.
Ben sent out
a picture of the arch when you can't see the top of it because of the fog.
So. It was like sunny, but there was this layer of fog over the city. It was very interesting to see.
Yeah.
What a day for St. Louis FC. I want to start with that real quick and give them their due. They do not end the season. They do not end their entire franchise until they say so.
We're not done yet.
They are not done
yet.
They went to Hartford and won 1-0. Good for them.
And they won in like the, fourth or fifth minute of extra time at the end of the game. It was like there wasn't much time left, and they got it done. So I'm really happy for the fans because they have the most loyal fans around, and just thrilled for that whole organization that they get to keep playing.
Yeah, I like that. Good for Jim Cavanaugh and that group and the Luligans and everybody else that I know they're going to make their way over to St. Louis City SC. And I know that's not easy, though. You know, you put all that time and effort into a franchise and you know that it's going to come to an end. But when? I don't know. I mean, next weekend they're going to play again. They're going to play Louisville City and they beat them once.
Yeah.
They're, I think, 1-2-1 against them this year. So it's the Eastern Conference semis for them, but they win at Hartford. And now they have Louisville City, and we'll see. I mean, what a story that would be.
Louisville and St. Louis, the FC, there, that's a great rivalry. And so it's really fun that it's going to come down to that, and let's see, and hopefully they'll move on.
You just called them the most loyal fans around. This is coming from a Blues fan right here.
I know. And what, you know, when you have a minor league team, and that's what they are, you know, they're like second level. You're a smaller group. And, you know, it's harder to get people in a major league city to jump on that bandwagon. And so when you're there, you're a part of a small select group, and they're loyal, they're loud, they travel. And so
I hear you, man.
Pretty loyal. Yeah.
No, that's right on. And that's exactly what we've reached here is this team. I'm telling you, that would be, and we all know, that would be just an outstanding story. I love stories like that. I pull for stories like that, and I hope that they get another win and keep this thing going and play for a championship in a season where they're going to fold. I mean, that is just awesome.
Yeah.
So good for them, and let it be known that we led Sports on a Sunday Morning with St. Louis FC. I really want those fans and that group to know that we care about them. Now, as for your St. Louis Blues, and my St. Louis Blues for that matter, wow. I mean, when I saw that Doug Armstrong had signed Torrey Krug, I'm like, holy bleep. I mean, I thought I don't know if it's cold-blooded or if that is a shrewd business move or that is just getting the job done when you knew that you probably are going to lose him and you've got to get the next best available. He was the next best available. Torrey Krug is not Alex Pietrangelo. But he's a very good offensive-minded defenseman. Mm-hmm. We all know he can lay out a hit because he put Robert Thomas on his rear end early in the Stanley Cup final.
It was a charge, but yeah.
I don't know. I mean, yeah. He didn't leave his feet until after he blasted him. But he came a long way. He was ready to go.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's some move. I mean, I think that Doug Armstrong is successful because of this. You can argue one way or the other. You know how I feel about Petro. I mean, this is the captain of the team, and I didn't feel like the Blues, it was in their best interest to lose him. But this is a money thing, and if he's going to get more money, you've got to make the next move. And so if I'm Alex Pietrangelo, my head was spinning a little bit yesterday. Yeah.
And his options are limited. I mean, Toronto went ahead, and they signed TJ Brody, so they're out of the sweepstakes. Vegas, even to make room, has to make some moves and has to have somebody take some of Fleury.
They dealt Stastny to the Jets.
And so they've got to free up some space. There's talk about Florida, but would he want to go down there? I mean, you got Quinville, and they've got a lot of talent. They've had a lot of talent for a long time and still can't win. So his options are smaller and smaller all the time, too. It was a bold move, for sure, and it's a case of where, you know what? We've given you our best offer. We've gone over this over and over again. We can't wait. We've got to take care of our situation. And I don't want to see Petro go, but you got to hand it to Doug Armstrong. I mean, the guy went as far as he felt he could and decided we cannot get through this without bringing somebody in who can step in and at least fill some of those skates.
Now, look, I know that people want John Mozeliak to be that way. I mean, they want him to, and he's made some moves in the past, but they want him to clean this thing up and get this team going. And I think it really bothers people that some former Cardinals are thriving in the postseason and have been. Whitey Herzog has an interesting take on that. You're going to hear him coming up here in the next segment. Whitey addresses that directly. So I'll be interested to hear what people think about the Hall of Famer. I did talk to him. He sounds so good. He's going to be 89 next month, and Whitey Herzog will be part of the show here in just a few minutes, so don't go anywhere. Plus, Al Hrabowski, who is on my Garage Happy Hour, will also be on the show. We'll play a few snippets of that. He was really good. And wow, Eli Drinkwitz, welcome to the University of Missouri. Now, this is an LSU team. I'm going to start by saying this, for all the Mizzou haters out there, or Mizzou realists, because we all are.
Yeah.
And we all, by the way, were counting the downs there on the 1 yard line. I guarantee you. I was too. But they shut them down on 1, 2, 3, 4 downs in a row and won the game against LSU yesterday, 45-41. LSU is not the LSU from last year. They did not beat, they technically beat the defending national champion, but they've lost a lot of players to the NFL. They are depleted. They're not the same. That said, Missouri is also not the same, not at all. I mean, they lost 7 players to COVID for this game, 3 of their top defensive tackles, 3 of their top receivers. This was a Missouri team that was also dealing with a lot of depth issues, and with a freshman quarterback, they hung in there and beat LSU straight up. I mean, there is no trick to it. They won the game. They beat them. They outplayed them. As ESPN put a big headline in all caps, LSU just lost to Missouri, with an emoji with wide eyes. No, Mizzou beat LSU. I mean, you know, so if that might get people's attention. Mizzou beat LSU in an SEC football game, and congratulations to them.
I like the way they kept responding. You know, a lot of times when you have a game like that, if a team like LSU comes back and takes a lead on you, you're done. Not Missouri. They kept coming back. They kept fighting. And as we saw, literally the very last play, they kept fighting. And then you talk about the receivers who were down. You know, a couple weeks ago, we had some drop passes that could have really changed the game. Those guys were great. I don't know. The depth on that receiving core showed itself, and that was very impressive to see.
Suddenly, things look a little different for Missouri. I mean, they play Vanderbilt next. So you got a chance to go 2-2, and you got to come back and get a win here. But you play them at home on a Saturday night. Then they go to Florida. Florida got beat yesterday by Texas A&M, so we'll see how they respond to that. And Kentucky on Halloween, October 31st at 11 a.m., and then Georgia. They'll deal with that when you have to deal with that. But this is a good win, a very, very good win for Eli Drinkwitz, who will be on the show today. He's coming up in a half hour.
And remember when the talk was about, what was it, old man football in the SEC? That looked like they were doing a Big 12 impersonation yesterday. All those games were crazy.
There are some high-scoring games. So the one thing, though, underneath all of that, even though it was a video game-type score, 45-41, Missouri held LSU down, their running game in check. Mm-hmm. They really did, although LSU was flinging the ball all over the place and doing it with ease at times. But they held them in check, and this is shocking to me, after what Tennessee did, 0 for 10 on third down. Wow. LSU, 0 for 10.
Yeah.
When Missouri could not stop Tennessee on third down or fourth down, for that matter. LSU for the game, 20 carries for 49 yards.
Wow.
Never in my wildest dreams would I think that that would be the case, an LSU team against a Missouri team, but that's what happened.
And LSU took advantage of a couple of turnovers. If Missouri can eliminate those, it's the game's not as close.
So there's a lot going on, including the news that broke over the last few hours. The Patriots-Broncos game has been postponed until next week because of an outbreak or another positive test. This within the Patriots organization. The Titans have another a positive test, so they've shut down that facility. We're trying to sort all of this out. I don't know what the future of the NFL is. I can tell you right now that they are postponing games, and it's not great, especially with all the resources they have. They chose not to go with a bubble, and it's difficult to do, granted, but here's where we are. The Patriots-Broncos game, so adjust your fantasy teams accordingly, and the Titans also are being are dealing with this as well. We do have the Chiefs coming up at 11 a.m. That's our pregame Chiefs and Raiders. That's why we only have an hour today. Whitey Herzog is next. That's Brian Kelly. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ackerman. Sports on a Sunday morning with Whitey Herzog next.
From KMOX Sports,
here's the pitch.
Welcome back to Sports on a Sunday Morning.
Oh, yeah!
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Tom Ackerman back on KMOX. Look who we have on the line. It's Hall of Famer Whitey Herzog. Whitey, it's great to talk to you. First of all, how are you doing?
Well, I'm still on this side of the grass, Tom. I feel very good. Everybody tells me how good I look, but I'll be honest, Tom, I don't feel as good as I look.
I saw a picture of you recently. You do look great, and I know that you are... You know, just like all of us, we're taking it each day, right? I mean, this is a tough time.
I'll tell you something. This virus has affected every person in the United States. I mean, it's just, I hope they get to the, you know, figure out what's going on. They stop it. They get us back to normal living because it's tough. I mean, it's just tough for everybody, but you got to live with it. You got to be careful. You got to be careful in public. You got to, you know, wear the mask and try to keep it. At my age, I certainly hope I don't get it, you know.
Yeah, I understand, and I'm absolutely with you on that. We send our love to you and Mary Lou and everybody. And, you know, it has been a tough month here, Whitey, with the passing of Lou Brock and Bob Gibson. I wanted to ask you to share your thoughts, if you would, on Mr. Gibson first, and who we just lost him on Friday night. What an incredible figure in Cardinals history and in baseball history, Whitey.
Yes. You know, I did all my playing and my first couple of managing jobs over in the American League. So I didn't personally know Bob until I came here as a manager in 1980, and I think he was doing some broadcast work for Jack and Shannon, and he was also in the booth, and Jack and Shannon were very fond of Bob, and they were actually wanting me to hire him as my pitching coach when I took the job, and because I hadn't named my coaches yet when I first joined the club, you know. Down in Atlanta, I kept the coaches that Kenny had till the end of the year. And, you know, if I'd have known Bob Gibson personally, like I knew him now, say 30 years later or even 5 years later, I probably would have hired him. But I had to have somebody to talk to and what he was on the road and stuff. And I couldn't hire a bunch of guys I didn't know. But, you know, once I got to know Gibby and what a great guy he was, and I was at numerous functions with him and so forth. He was really what you call a genuine person. And, you know, in my 8 years that I worked with the New York Mets in development and so forth, I'd have to say that Bob Gibson when I did get to know him was just here's what I would say. Then when they came out with the quality start, six innings, and if anything typifies Bob Gibson, the statement he made to me one night at a function in Busch Stadium, he said, when I pitched, a quality start was a nine-inning complete game win. And when you look at Bob Gibson's record, the fact that he had more, well, you'd call it appearances and complete games than he had wins. I think it was like 254 to 258.
You're right.
Then you look at the complete games this last year. Wainwright led in complete games with two in 60 games. The year before, I think the American League leader had three, and the National League leader had two. You know, it's a joke. And the one thing that he stressed was he thinks that they're babying the young pitchers too much, and that there might be something to that. And with all the analytics being used in baseball now, you know, the analytics feels like most pitchers can't go through the batting order three times. And when our young pitchers have 100 pitches in the sixth inning, they're out of there. They pinch hit for them, and that's the way it is. So by the same token, we're not going to have any more 250 or 300 game winning pitchers if history keeps going like it is. It just ain't going to happen. But when I look back at when I joined and I got to the big leagues in 1956 and until I retired in 90, you know, I've seen some awful good pitchers. And most of the good pitchers, their worst inning was always the first one. If you got Gibson and got him in trouble in the first inning, or Tom Seaver or Koufax or Drysdale or Carlton, who I consider probably the five best pitchers of all time that I've seen, you know, if they settled down by the second, third inning, they was almost certain they were going to go all the way. And now it's just the opposite. You know, I don't know when the last time since I retired as a manager that I've seen a starting pitcher pitch with the bases loaded in the eighth inning.
You know, I love hearing the stories about Bob, and I loved hearing Bob talk about pitching. And I saw an interview that he did with Reggie Jackson some years ago when they came out with their book. And he said, you know, people thought that I pitched people inside. He said, I pitched them away because most hitters like the ball middle in so they can pull it. He said, I pitched them away. It was when they started to lean out to go for it. That's when I had to stand them up a little bit.
That's when everybody did. You know, and Gibby had the thing that he would brush back guys. But to protect yourself, because the big right-hand hitters against pitchers like him and Seaver that were power guys, they start leaning over, you know, and they had to come inside to get them off the plate, so the outside was more vulnerable. I knew Satchel Paige real well. I played with him at Miami. I was a coach when Finley signed him at 60 years old for the A's in Kansas City and sat in the bullpen and talked to him a lot. He always stated that more mistakes are made inside than outside. And he always said, with two strikes, pound the pitcher away about 3 inches outside and let the hitter make the mistake. And that was the way he pitched. And I didn't see Satchel on his prime, but Feller and all of them told me that he might have been one of our greatest pitchers in history, which he was. I'm sure he was.
Whitey, when I say the name Lou Brock, what do you think of?
Well, what I really think of, and I'm going to be very honest, I wish Vince Coleman was as good a hitter as Lou Brock was. And the reason I say that, because when I think of Lou Brock, when I was coaching third base and for the Mets in 1966, Lou Brock was the regular left fielder for the Cardinals. And when he charged a one-hop line drive to left field, you better be careful because he'd throw you out. He had that good arm. But when the ball bounced twice instead of once, he had a little trouble handling it. And I got to know him personally over the years, and I was just with him last year during a Cardinal game, and he come out of the hospital, and I sat and talked to him. I thought he was doing pretty well. But I used to hear from Red, and I used to hear from Shannon, and I used to hear from Gibby and all his teammates what a tough guy he was. He was never in the trainer's room, never getting treatment, never missed any games. And I thought myself, when Vince played for me from the time I left here to 1965, and his mentality, if he could have got on base and been the hitter as good as Lou Brock was, he might have stole 150 bases a year. That's the one thing, personally, I thought about. Boy, Vince, I wish you could have hit like Lou Brock. You know, but the last few years, Tom, when I think of Lou's illnesses and, you know, the amputation because of diabetes, the heart problems he was having and so forth, and then his wife, you know, with the eyesight and so forth, they had a miserable 3 years with so many health complications, and yet every time you seen both of them, they were smiling, going on, and they just looked at life like they were just happy to be here every day they spent on Earth. That's the one thing I remember about Lou and his wife.
Whitey Herzog is with us, the Hall of Famer. One more thing for you, Whitey, before we go. Yeah, I know you watch a lot of baseball, and I know you had your eyes on the Cardinals. Just your assessment on where the Cardinals are right now and what they can do to be better.
Tell you something. There's a wonderful opportunity for the Cardinals right now. If they realize they got to get a couple of hitters in the outfield, and they have to make themselves better and more consistent offensively. And when you look at their club this year and even last year, they've got to learn to make contact. They can't keep striking out one out of every four at-bats as a team, which they did this year with the DH in the lineup. Last year was one out of 4.5 times as a team. And when you strike out, you don't move runners. And when you don't move runners, you don't pick up runs you should pick up early in the ball game, and you're not consistent on your run-scoring ability. One night you might get 7 or 8, and then you go into a tank, and you don't get 2 or 3 runs in a game for a week, and it ain't going to work. I think their infield and Yachty, my God, I can't say enough good things about Yachty. How many games he catches, the important hits he gets, day games after night games after years. He's just an amazing athlete, and I think their infield is plenty good to win the pennant. But they got to get a couple. I know that I do think this, too, that Carlson will be one of the regulars starting next season and be a very good major league ball player defensively and offensively and put up numbers. Who knows what it's going to be, but I think his numbers are going to be at least a 20-20 guy and be defensively a very good ball player. So if they can come up with a young outfielder that's going to play every day and hit 250 and put the ball in play, I think right then and there, you know, they've contended. But when you look at the American League, you know, if Rhett Yelich don't come back what he was, Milwaukee's got no offense. When you look at Cincinnati, the last time the Cardinals played them, they had one regular hitting over 254. When you look at Pittsburgh, they're a long way away. They got to get lucky with about 3 starting pitchers. And the opportunity right now is for the Cardinals to make hay, and they can win that division if they do it the right way. And, you know, I don't want to criticize the moves the Cardinals made, because hindsight is a hell of a lot better, you know, than foresight. And, you know, you look at the American League, and they're talking about Volt leading the American League in home runs, and then the National League and talking about Azuma leading in RBIs and batting average and everything else. And then you got Kachuk just signed a long-term contract for $10 million a year. And now you're talking about Arizona, who's really having a playoff for Tampa Bay and looks like to really be a good young hitter. But he's an outstanding young hitter with power. And, you know, he can run. He's just a great ball player. But, you know, they traded him. I've heard a lot of good things about the left-hand pitcher they got, not only from the Cardinals but other people. So he'll probably be a starter up here next year or the year after. So they're going to have pitchers, because they got so much pitching depth. They're going to always have one of the deepest staffs and one of the best staffs in the National League. But offensively, they got to patch it up a little bit, and hopefully they get lucky with Carlson. Not lucky, but he does what people think he's going to do, and then they got to get a couple other guys to play out there.
He's one of the best managers in the history of the game. Whitey, I miss hanging out with you, our 1-2-3 club meetings and everything else, but boy, is it great to talk some baseball with Whitey Herzog. I really appreciate it.
Okay, always good talking to you, Tom.
Thank you very much. There he is, Whitey Herzog, with us on KMOX. All the best to him and his wife, Mary Lou. We'll be back right after this.
From KMOX Sports,
here's the pitch.
Welcome back to Sports on a Sunday Morning.
Oh, yeah!
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Hope you enjoyed the conversation with Whitey Herzog. Isn't he great? Wow. What great points he makes, too, about the Cardinals and their outfield. And here's Al Raboski. I visited with him on my garage happy hour on Thursday. Al was terrific, the Mad Hungarian. We talked about Bob Gibson. We discussed Lou Brock. We told some stories about Al in the 1970s playing for the Cardinals and the Royals and the Braves. But we did talk about this 2020 Cardinals club, and he said this.
I think Bill DeWitt's the best owner in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because he loves baseball. He knows his organization better than just about anybody. And he doesn't do stupid things. You know, just throwing money out there doesn't always work. You have to have that cohesive family atmosphere in the clubhouse. And, you know, and I think you got a great communicator in Mike Schilt that is going to help that. Well, whatever he gets, he's going to mold it the best way. But, you know, and you know the fan base is looking at Luke Voigt, they're looking at Ozuna, looking at Jose Reyna, you know, all those guys and what they've done. And so there's some pressure on them right now. And I just wonder if they say, okay, we didn't get the answers we were looking for last year, and we're going to basically go with the same offensive group, I'm not sure the fan base is going to accept that.
The season will be here before we know it. The Cardinals already have a spring training schedule, and then they will open the season. And when that home opener happens at Busch Stadium, we certainly hope it's back with fans and Clydesdales and everything else. Here's Al.
We rave about opening day, and we think and we know St. Louis has the best opening day of all baseball. But when I was playing, you know, Stan would be around the ballpark quite a bit, but we didn't have the fanfare or something like that. Red was managing. Lou and Bob were teammates. So you didn't have those guys. And then now to have that Red Jackets, not only to see the – so all we had really was the Clydesdales, which I thought was great in its own right.
Yeah.
But the last few years, to have all those great on the field, and then they came up with the Cardinal Hall of Fame, it's just so significant. And it's the best production in baseball. I just know that next year we're going to be able to, you know, have fans in the stands. You know, the Cardinals are going to have to do something special on opening day for Lou and Gibby. But we also have to remember, we got to hang on with Red, with Whitey. Whitey's getting up there in age. I know he's doing, health-wise, he's okay. But we have to remember the treasures that are still with us.
Indeed. And Whitey was great in that last segment. He'll be 89 next month. He mentioned Lou Brock, Al did. They were very, very close.
You know, I think it was just very simple where he would, you know, welcome me to the ball club. But I remember after that, you know, he started, you know, a few times we'd go to dinner, a few times we'd do this or do that, you know, but, you know, I got a T-shirt deal when, you know, out of Lou. He even made up a Mad Hungarian Brockabrella for me at the time. And we did a lot of little things. It was one of those friendships, too, that, you know, if I didn't see him when I got traded to the Royals and then the Braves and, you know, I'm not seeing Lou for a few years or something. Once we were back together, it was just like you just picked up and had a conversation yesterday. I always thought he had my best interest at heart. And, you know, he tried to educate me to, you know, some people to, you know, trust the financial world or, you know, he got me my first agent, you know, those kind of things. That was his agent. And that was just coming into vogue. But, you know, Lou was just such a special person. And you know, both of them, you know, the baseball world lost two greats.
It's a very, very special fraternity, the former Cardinals, and they pass that knowledge and genuine love for each other on to the next group of players, and you can hear it in Al's voice, no doubt about it, and all of those that we've had on the air over the last month. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, he has established himself so far in Columbia. Eli Drinkwitz, the head coach of the Missouri Tigers, huge win for him yesterday. He's live with us next at 10:45 on Sports on a Sunday Morning.
KMOX Sports.
Here's the pitch. Welcome back to Sports on a Sunday Morning.
Oh, yeah!
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Well, they lit up Jesse Hall in gold last night, a new tradition at the University of Missouri, and here comes Eli Drinkwitz, the head coach of the Tigers. Big win for them yesterday, 45-41 over LSU. How are you, Coach? Always great to have you on KMOX.
Yeah, I'm doing good, working, figure out ways to get better.
That's right. Vanderbilt's next. That's the life of a coach, isn't it? Off you go.
Yes, sir. I mean, you're only as good as your last game, and we have a 24-hour rule. We're not quite to that 24 hours, but as coaches, you know, we're watching the tape. We're seeing the things that have to get corrected, and that's what our focus is right now.
What were you thinking about last night in those great moments with your team, with your friends and family?
You know, I think it's just been a long 9 months for everybody, as far as just dealing with the virus, the uncertainty, the you know, the questions, whether or not this is going to work. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of things that have gone on and for it to pay for it, not really for me, for the kids, for our staff, for everybody that's believing in us, that was really all I was worried about.
I thought there was a lot to be said for that final stand on the 1 yard line. You stop them on four downs and beat LSU. I heard you say on the TV interview right after, you referenced Toughness Tuesday. What is Toughness Tuesday?
Well, Toughness Tuesday for us is just that tough day of the week where, you know, we have lifting in the morning. They got to get up early. They got to come in, lift. They got to go do their academics. They got to come back. And Tuesday's practice is always a physical practice. It's always the most mentally challenging and demanding because you've lifted, you've went into long meetings, you go out and practice 24 periods. It's a hard day. And the only way to attack that day is with toughness, mental and physical toughness. And it showed on that fourth down stop.
Yes, it did. And you were missing so many. You were missing so many defensive tackles and D-backs and wide receivers due to injury and COVID-19. And you still got the job done over a good LSU team. That's for sure. The defending national champions, number 17 in the country. Before we talk about your quarterback, Connor Bazelak, I wanted to ask what you felt about his teammate, Sean Robinson. That is never an easy thing. But it is football, and you had to make a change. How did that go?
Yeah, you know, I couldn't be more proud of Sean and the way he handled himself this week and was just an incredible teammate all week. It was never about him. It was about how can we win as a football team. I think our team saw that, and they responded to the way that he responded to the situation. And he practiced his mental toughness, and it was remarkable for our football team, and it's a great sign for him as a person moving forward, and it's a great sign for our football team too.
That's good. What makes Connor go, and what makes this offense go? How did that work so well for you as he flings the ball around and has a tremendous day?
Yeah, I mean, he was obviously in the zone, which helps a lot. But let's make sure we don't all overreact to a one-game performance. He had a tremendous game, but the hallmark of a quarterback is consistency. And we got to be consistent next week and the week after and the week after and the week after. So not ready to just, you know, say we've arrived. He's a young quarterback. He still has a lot of things that he can continue to grow and learn from. But I was extremely proud of the poise that he showed throughout the game.
There were some fumbles in this game, too. I mean, you did lose three fumbles in the game. You referenced there are some things certainly to clean up. But to turn it back around also and to establish the run and stop the run like you did. We just talked about this last week, how Tennessee kept converting on third down after third down. How do you hold them on to no third down conversions?
Well, I think it's our will to improve and don't overreact. Just react. You know, figure out what you got to do to make the plays change in your favor, and that's what we did. Again, I mean, there's a lot of things that we're going to go back and correct. It's just it's better to do it after a win than a loss. So, but we had the ball was on the ground way too much. We had some poor things happen to us in special teams, and so a lot of things that we're going to have to continue to work to improve on.
And I know that Nick Bolton's banged up, and there's an injury there. You know, obviously, you don't need to disclose everything that's going on with him, but that's some effort too.
Yeah, he's a warrior. There's no doubt, and that's why he's a team captain. He has the respect of all of his teammates for the way he puts himself out there every day. You know, game on the line. So incredibly proud of him and the rest of the defense for the way they performed.
So Vanderbilt is next, and then you have a game after that. But I know your concentration will be on the Commodores. What's the biggest thing? What's the message to your team after this 24-hour period expires?
It's all about improvement. You know, as a team, as a program, we're nowhere near where we want to be, and the only way to get there is to constantly improve. If you sit there and pat yourself on the back, you're going to get a butt with them. And so we're not going to sit here and pat ourselves on the back. We're going to sit here and acknowledge the things that we did right, acknowledge the things that we did wrong, and we got to go out to work today and Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and correct it.
Well, everything that went against you, you found a way, and in the end, got a victory 45-41 over LSU. Congratulations on it. Good luck next week. Thank you for adjusting, by the way, on this time to join us at 10:45 so we can get to the Chiefs at 11. Really appreciate it, Coach. Always great having you on KMOX.
No problem. Go Chiefs.
That's right. There he is, Eli Drinkwitz, the head coach of the Missouri Tigers. Terrific. Enjoyed that very much. That was a really, really nice win for the University of Missouri and their fans who've been hanging in there, no doubt about it. Joining us on the line, he's been hanging on. It is Nick Ragone back on KMOX. How are you?
I'm great, and it was a great win yesterday. Glad to hear Coach talk about it.
Yeah, it was a very good win for the Tigers, no question about it. Well, Nick, this has been a challenging year for a lot of people, and with your great group at Ascension, you've been able to kind of, you know, keep moving forward, I would say. You try to make the best, right?
Yeah, I think that's a great way of putting it. You know, we announced the tournament, the Ascension Charity Classic, presented by Emerson, almost a year ago exactly, October 8th, and great press conference, and great momentum up to March. We had selling out the pro-ams, tickets, sponsorships, and obviously COVID hit and our world stopped, and obviously much more important, you know, the health of the country versus sports. But, and so we had to cancel the event, which we're disappointed with, but at the same time, I'm extraordinarily proud for two things. One is Emerson stepped up to be the presenting sponsor. And just keep in mind, they did that at the height of COVID, which says a lot about that company and Dave Farr and their leadership, and Worldwide did as well. And so because of that, Last week, we were still able to give out $225,000 to our three charities, Mary Grove, the Boys and Girls Club, and Urban League, without a shot being hit ever in the history of the tournament. And according to the PGA Tour, we're the first event in tour history to ever give out charity before the event started. And that says everything you need to know about St. Louis, about the companies that are here and the good corporate citizens, and about what we want to accomplish with this tournament. So now we're ticket sales are online right now, and we're already sold 3,000 tickets in the first week, which, again, it's a year away. That's amazing.
Nick is the Executive Vice President of Ascension, Chief Marketing and Communications Officer, and boy, did you have some people. I mean, how about Tom Watson and Jack Nicklaus, among others, that were involved in getting your message out there? If anyone has ever been to a PGA Tour Champions event, it is just remarkable to see these living legends just walking through the property.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah, you know, we were fortunate. Last week we did a little event with Mr. Nicklaus, Tom Watson, and Hale. And first of all, they're so giving of their time. Tom Watson obviously has a connection to Norwood. He met his famed caddy, Bruce Edwards, there in 1973. Jack has a connection to this area, too. You know, he loves major golf. He loves Belle Reve. He remembers playing in 65. And, of course, Hale Irwin's lived here for so long. And they've been so supportive. And the Champions Tour, for anybody that has been to an event, those pro-ams are as much fun as you can get, playing inside the ropes with these legends. They talk. They give you playing tips. They engage with you. They're so friendly. And so we think we're going to have an extraordinary field next year. We're hoping Ernie Els, Jim Furyk has won twice. Phil has played his first event. He's playing again in a few weeks, and we're hoping to get Phil here. So we think we're going to have a stacked field, and we think the fans are going to love it.
2021, it will be September 6th through the 12th at Norwood Hills Country Club, where, by the way, Ben Hogan won the 1948 PGA Championship.
Yes, it's a historic course, and I think the players are going to enjoy it. Billy Andrade played here last week for the first time, and he said that it's going to be a great test for those guys. Obviously, the fast greens, undulating, and buzz is already out there among the tour players that St. Louis is going to be a must stop. And again, this is different than the PGA at Belle Reve. This isn't one and done. This is, you know, we have a 4-year contract, and we're hoping, you know, this event stays in the community for the next 20, 30 years.
Mary Grove Urban League of Metropolitan St. Louis, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater St. Louis, among the beneficiaries of the Ascension Charity Classic. Just go to ascensioncharityclassic.com. You get all the details, and tickets, as Nick said, are already going. We really appreciate it. Thank you for being on Sports on a Sunday Morning on KMOX, Nick.
No, thank you for promoting it. Go Chiefs.
That's right. The Chiefs are next. Our producer, James O'Sullivan. I'm Tom Ackerman. Thank you to Whitey Herzog and Al Roboski and Eli Drinkwitz on Sports on a Sunday Morning.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.